Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This is going to be an empowering hour. My guest in the second part of our program today will be a continuation with Dr. Henry Grayson. He is a part of our Conversations with Remarkable Minds. We're going to pick up where we left off last time. We're going to talk about the science and methods to use our body to heal our mind. And Dr. Henry Grayson is one of our nation's leading mind-body-spirit psychologists and a pioneer in spirituality-based energy psychology. We'll talk with him in a longer segment. A commentary, if time permits, today from Professor James Tracy. Commentary from Professor Tracy, who is an associate professor of media studies at Florida Atlantic University, will focus upon subverting educational practices. I will have my own commentary on a similar theme. And then from Tom Carter, we'll talk about thousands of military drones to be deployed over the United States. Also, a short commentary from George Montabat about world leaders at our Earth Summit. They're there now, down in Rio. Well, what exactly is happening when you get a bunch of plutocrats together? Well, they represent the elite, not our environment. I'll talk about that. Two calls to actions today. Something we must do today because the powers that be are trying to get their pro-GMO rider to a funding bill and make it law in the 2013 Agriculture Appropriations Bill. It's in hearing right now at the House Appropriations Committee, and we need to call them, and I'll tell you why in a few moments. And then also there's we have to halt a farm bill that attacks our Clean Water Act, and we'll tell you what to do about that. So we have a lot to share with you. And also, let us call the governor's office today. Our third call to action on today's program will be to tell Governor Cuomo, please don't experiment with fracking in impoverished areas of New York. So as you see, we're covering lots. Let's begin. For those of you who care about your skin, and I'm sure most of you do, and try to eat the right foods, have lots of good, clean, healthy water and juices, because that's where it begins, but also what you put topically on the skin, that makes a big difference. Here's the latest. And it says, this is from the Annals of Dermatology. It says, there is new information that indicates that the unnaturally accelerated aging process associated with modern living and our environment, exposures to ultraviolet radiation, meaning photoaging, can be slowed. In fact, over 150 different natural substances have been indexed on aging that actually have anti-aging or longevity-promoting properties. Of the 69 natural substances indexed, a potential value in aging skin, guess what is number one? Aloe. You heard me right. Aloe. In a study that was published in the Journals of Annals of Dermatology, healthy female subjects over the age of 45 received two different oral doses of aloe vera gel supplements over 90 days. They saw remarkable results. The researchers measure clinical signs and biochemical changes of aging skin before and after supplementation and found that, quote, after aloe gel intake, the facial wrinkles improved significantly in both groups and facial elasticity improved in the lower dose group, and concluded aloe gel significantly improved wrinkles and aging diminishment in photoaged human skin, end quote. Well, that's terrific. So that's about 3,600 milligrams of aloe a day. That's about 3.6 grams. Remember, it takes 28 grams to make an ounce, so you're talking about 1/7 of an ounce, and that's less than a teaspoon. So don't have to take a lot to see the benefits. So for those of you who are taking your aloe concentrate every day, once or twice a day, See if you've noticed a difference in your skin's aging, because this study says you will. Vaccinated children have 500% more diseases and disorders than unvaccinated children. This is from David Michael Augustine. Here's what it says. A German study released recently of 8,000 non-vaccinated children, newborn to 19 years of age, show vaccinated children had at least 500% more diseases and disorders than the non-vaccinated children. The results are presented in a chart. The complete data is in the study, and it's from the National German KIGGS Health Study of the Children from a General Population. Didn't hear a word about this in the United States, at least overseas. They're telling you the truth about vaccines. Soy milk and tofu may reduce buildup of harmful fat in the liver, according to this new study. New research suggests that soy protein may protect against fatty liver disease. By the way, that is a big condition in the United States. Scientists in the U.S. compared the livers of lean and obese rats fed a diet containing either milk or soy protein. And what they found was that obese rats fed soy showed a 20% reduction in overall levels of fat accumulation in the liver. This was done at the University of Illinois. Quote, when fat accumulates in an organ that's not supposed to store fat, like the liver, the organ's vital function can be dangerously compromised. The findings were presented at the annual meeting of the American Society of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology. So make sure that you get soy. Chamomile has a life-saving secret, the power of apigenin, A-I-P-I-G-E-N-I-N. It's a tea. Most people have used chamomile tea, but people didn't know that according to new research about pancreatitis and pancreatic cancer, that it helps prevent complications of diabetes, it helps with loss of vision, it helps nerves that are damaged, and helps with kidneys that are damaged. It does all these things. Who knew? But also, it seems to play a big role with the pancreas. There were numerous studies discussed with a particular chemical that's in chamomile, apigenin, and its ability to inhibit the growth of pancreatic cancer cells through various mechanisms. And apigenin is a citrus bioflavonoid compound found in chamomile and some other fruits. That's what gives the chamomile its yellow color. But it also inhibits pancreatic cancer. So, that's very important. Here's what this scientific study says. Apigenin found in chamomile suppresses pancreatic cancer growth through suppression of cyclin B associated with CDC2 activity. Well, that's good to know. So just take a tea twice a day and of chamomile. I would put some green tea in equal amounts. That way you're getting the benefit of green tea and chamomile. Now, something else you can have each day that's important is pomegranate juice. You can either get the already husked pomegranate, which is good. In season, you can get the pomegranate concentrate, which is better. Or you can get unsweetened pomegranate juice. Here's the latest study about why you should be consuming pomegranate juice. Quote, pomegranate juice linked to significant blood pressure reduction. I'll quote this. Drinking pomegranate juice may help to reduce blood pressure. Research by Dr. Anthony Lin, published in the journal Plant Foods for Human Nutrition, found that pomegranate juice supplements had short-term benefits for blood pressure after 51 healthy adults showed a large fall in blood pressure after drinking the juice for just 4 weeks. Now, why? What's in the pomegranate? Well, there's a lot. It's a rich source of the polyphenolic antioxidants. There's at least 20 studies on how it can reduce arterial stiffness, and that reduces cardiovascular health risks. So all that is good, and it lowers the blood pressure. It also is rich in polyphenols, and it's very rich in potassium. So get your pomegranate. One other thing here, get more fruit. This is a major study done at Texas AgriLife Research Center, part of the university system there. And here's what it says. Fruit fennels may have metabolic syndrome benefits. Now, what that means in lay language is your phenolic compounds found in stone fruit. You know what a stone fruit is? A plum, an apricot, a peach, a nectarine. Those are your stone fruits because they have a hard stone-like seed in the middle of them. Those could be used in a way that is synergistic as a weapon against metabolic syndrome, which means prediabetes and diabetes. This was presented at the American Chemical Society's meeting. And that would help people who have inflammation, people who are diabetic, and people who have heart disease. This is from the lead researcher. The major concern about obesity is the associated disease known as metabolic syndrome. Our studies have shown that stone fruits, peaches, plums, nectarines, have bioactive compounds that could potentially fight the syndrome. Our work indicates that phenolic compounds present in these fruits have anti-obesity, anti-inflammatory, and anti-diabetic properties in different cell lines, may also reduce the oxidation of bad cholesterol, the LDL, which is associated with cardiovascular disease, end quote. All good. Glad about that. And finally, a major study from the University of Colorado. Here's what it says. While marijuana use by teens has been increasing since 2005, an analysis of data from 1993 through 2000 by experts at three universities has found no evidence, I repeat, no evidence, to link the legalization of marijuana, medical marijuana, to increased use of drugs among high school students. Quote, there is anecdotal evidence that medical marijuana is finding its way into the hands of teenagers, but there is no statistical evidence that legalization increases the probability of use. And that was from Professor Daniel Reese, University of Colorado. And a group of other professors wrote a paper on this. So, for those like Bill Riley and others who moralize and pontificate and brag about how they've never used marijuana. Well, Bill, I've never used marijuana or any other drug or drank alcohol or any of this other smoke. But there's no need to pontificate. The scientific research is clear on this. We should, if we were at all reasonable, we would legalize all drugs and then provide real preventative understanding and treatment for those who have adverse effects. You would decriminalize it. As a result, you would get rid of the privatization of our penal system, which is disproportionately affecting people and minority groups. And now you have the prison labor system that is exploiting them, able to pay them tiny, tiny wages, lower than people paid almost in any other country, on par with Bangladesh. And then you have contracts with the private prisons with the state where they're guaranteed that they'll have enough prisoners and beds filled. So they make their money when you have someone sent to jail. So they don't care what someone's sent to jail for. So Alec gets in there and the other lobbying groups and say, well, let's just get people in prison a longer period of time. The best group, the easiest group, are people taking drugs, mainly marijuana. It's all stupid. And then, of course, if you decriminalized it and you promoted ways of helping people understand why they take the drugs and the consequences, but in a positive way, then what do you do with all those narco-terrorists in Mexico and South America? What happens to them then? What happens to all the wanton killing and the bribery and corruption of officials? And what happens to all the 50,000 dead bodies that we know about and 100,000 we don't know about in Mexico? Kind of comes to an end, doesn't it? At least from drugs. And that's the latest study. So the next time they say, well, I don't want... Just do the research and you'll see that you've made a big to-do about nothing. It doesn't turn your kid into some sociopath, but they'd like you to believe that. Finally, too much salt can damage your blood vessels and lead to high blood pressure. This is from the American Heart Association's publication, Circulation. Quote, eating a high salt diet for several years may damage blood vessels, increasing your risk of developing high blood pressure. And people with this type of blood vessel damage who eat a high salt diet are more likely to develop hypertension. This research shows the presence of a sodium amplification loop in which eating too much salt for a long time damages blood vessels, leading even to more blood pressure. Well, we know that. This was done at Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital. So get out the sodium. Use lemon juice instead. I'm Gary Knoll. That concludes our health and nutrition segment. Now a few calls to action, and then we're going to go in studio, a short commentary, then a lot of time today for my guest, an extended, almost double interview. First, I'm very concerned about the loss of our freedoms. I know many of you are as well. This is the latest from Tom Carter. Thousands of military drones to be deployed over U.S. mainland. I'll quote this. A recent Department of Defense report to Congress, as well as a number of media investigations, have exposed government plans to deploy tens of thousands of drones, military drones, over U.S. mainland. An investigative report published over the weekend by the Christian Science Monitor cited the government's own estimates, quote, as many as 30,000 drones could be part of intelligence gathering law enforcement here in the United States within the next 10 years, end quote. These are unmanned aerial systems, UAS, or unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs, commonly known as drones. They're extremely sophisticated, remotely operated, and they can be weaponized. They cost billions of dollars, and we pay for it. They can be as small as a 4-pound RQ-11B Raven, or they can be large, like the giant MQ-9 Reaper. And they're made by, you guess it, Northrop Grumman and others that make a lot of money off these. And then it shows a map of all the places in the United States where they're going to use these in bases. About 110 military bases will service the drone launch sites. Tom Carter. So let me just get this straight. They have all these laws now and rules and executive orders that determine anybody can be considered an enemy. They can be so vague that any human being in the United States could be a suspect. You're given no habeas corpus, no rights. They can read all of our emails and do listen to our phone calls. They've done that for a long time. They can intercept any of our transmissions, no matter how simple it may be. If you were a son or a daughter wishing your father a happy Father's Day, they know about it. They have back windows in and have for almost 20 years into our computers. They've been doing that secretly. I reported on that on ABC on my show then, almost 20 years ago. No one took it seriously. They want to have ID cards. Now they want the camps, which they claimed originally were for illegal aliens, but they already have more than enough facilities for illegal aliens, but they've got room now for several million people to be incarcerated. Why? Who they intend to put in there? They don't say. Well, we know they're real, and who's building them? That much has come forward. Now they got drones. Now they have Americans who are able to be stationed in the United States for crowd control. And now they've gone to the latest extent this last 3 months of criminalizing animal rights activists. If you go on to a factory farm and if you photograph or video gross abuse to an animal, you will end up, according to the FBI, as a terrorist and will have no rights whatsoever. None. But the person that is abusing the animal on the factory farms, no, nothing happens to them. That's the power of lobbying. That's the power of money buying access and then changing the rules with that access. And anyone protesting anything today is on a watch list. So much for democracy and so much for so many people who claim they're pro-democracy and you don't hear peep from them. Now, behind that is the idea that if we don't pay attention to all these bills going through at the federal or the state level, one day we wake up and we don't have any rights. For example, this was sent to Sharon, my archivist of 20 years, that, quote, "This week the Senate will consider a farm bill stuffed with amendments that threaten the water we drink and our families enjoying that for swimming or other recreation. Against a drumbeat of polluter industry lobbyists asking for these damaging amendments, we must raise our voices. Join us to defend one of our nation's most important public health safeguards, the Clean Water Act. One of the most damaging attacks on clean water and health is an amendment by Senator Barrasso to block the Environmental Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers from better protecting small streams and wetlands, as well as rivers, lakes, and streams that they flow into. These are the sources of drinking water for 117 million Americans. Other amendments would exclude streams, lakes, and rivers that have been protected by the Clean Water Act since the 19th century. Effectively repealing the law by Senator Paul, undue limits of the discharge of manure, fertilizer, and sewage into Florida's waters responsible for toxic algae. And they would also exempt pesticides from the Clean Water Act. And so urge your senators today to reject any amendment that threatens to destroy the nation's most important safeguard for clean water. Tell them that people want and deserve better for the health of their families and safety of their community." And that was from Marty Hyden, Vice President of Policy and Legislation of Earth Justice. So let your legislator know, say no to changing or altering, amending the Clean Water Act. It's fine the way it was. Don't let the lobbyists, once again, as they've done 800 times in state legislators and as well as federal, to change our laws. Next, I'd like everyone in this audience to email or contact the governor and say, here's what I would say. Governor Cuomo, we understand that you've been under pressure by the fracking industry, the gas industry, but what you're going to do now is you're going to open up New York State and allowing a number of wells in those poorest of the poor areas with the idea that, oh, you're going to monitor hydrofracking to see if it's safe. Well, what you're doing, sir, is you're allowing the residents of New York State to be used as human guinea pigs. Broome, Chemung, Chenango, Steuben, and Tioga counties, that's what's called the Southern Tier. The southwest New York that borders Pennsylvania, that's where they want all this fracking to go on. That's where the Marcellus Shale, a large rock formation, it stretches from the Appalachian Mountains to upstate and western New York and through Pennsylvania. That's got one of the largest supplies of natural gas in the country. We don't want that. We don't want fracking. We don't need it. It's a bubble. If you looked at the actual literature, you would see that all this hydrofracking is redundant. We already have massive amounts of natural gas in storage, and the price is so low, it's not even cost-effective for people to drill for this. So what's behind it then? What's behind it are the people that control the syndicates to get all these other rich doctors and others to think they can make a lot of money. Oh, the price of natural gas will go to $20. Well, it's at $2.20 today. And it costs more than that to get it out. It costs about $2.5 million to put a well in. But with 200 plus toxic chemicals, millions of gallons of water necessary, roads that become broken down from the heavy use of all this traffic, pollution of the water, we don't need this. Fracking or hydrofracking is where they use high pressure of water and chemicals and sand to break the shale rock to extract the gas. And it is absolutely environmentally devastating. So if you stop listening to the pundits, listen to the people of New York. Because, sir, if you don't, we can assure you that we are going to do everything we can to have you out of office. It's time that the people took on the process, when you go pro-nuclear, you go pro-hydrofracking, you go pro-genetic engineering, then who exactly are you pro for? You're anti-people, in which case the people should throw your ass out of office. It's time we just got the courage to do it and to do it right. So hopefully you'll do the right thing and at least do something that actually shows you care about the actual people who live in this state. The bureaucrats don't care. It's one of the most god-awful places in the world if you own a business to do business, New York State. And for property owners, one of the highest taxes, second highest taxes in the United States. And one of the most corrupt legislators in the history of America, New York Assembly. So in New York, let the governor know, no fracking. Also today, and this is today, Congress is sneaking in, well, that's the only way they ever do anything, isn't it? A pro-genetically modified rider to a funding bill. And it may become law without anybody realizing it. So you must call today. The biotech industry, through all of its little sleazebag lobbyists, have inserted a dangerous rider in support of genetically engineered crops into the 2013 Agricultural Appropriations Bill. It's scheduled to be heard in the House today by the House Appropriations Committee. So we need to contact all day today and make our voice of opposition known. The provision would strip federal courts of the authority to halt the sale and planting of illegally, potentially hazardous genetically engineered crops while the USDA is assessing those potential hazards, which can take years. They control the USDA. They own the USDA. The USDA doesn't exist without them. In other words, even if a court said to halt the sale and planting of genetically engineered crops until a USDA environmental impact statement was completed, the crop will be planted and still go forward. Further, the provision would compel the USDA to allow continued planting of that same crop upon request, even if USDA finds that the crop poses serious health risks. That's right. The provision specifically mandates that the Secretary of Agriculture shall, upon request by a farm operator or producer, immediately grant a temporary permit authorizing crops to continue being planted or cultivated, even if a court has called a halt from the environmental impact statement until it's completed. They're calling it the Farmer Assurance Provision, Section 733. The Farmer Assurance Provision, Section 733. But far from safeguarding farmers, the only parties whose interests are assured by this rider are those of the genetically engineered crop developers. This rider is also certainly a response to the recent court interventions we've been telling you about, preventing the cell distribution cultivation of non-regulated GM sugar beets and genetically modified alfalfa, while full environmental evaluation is being done. So let your legislators know, especially those from the House Appropriations Committee. And if you call the general switchboard, they'll tell you about where to reach your legislator, which extension they're at, and also those in the House Appropriations Committee. And just look at who co-sponsors this stuff or who pushes it. And it's always people getting money from the genetically modified groups or their lobbying groups. It's such a really such a sleazy operation in Washington. Now, a short commentary, then a break, and then we're going to ask you to call in and share your points of view. We're trying to reach Dr. Grayson. We haven't reached him yet. As soon as we get him on the phone, we will go over to him. Have you ever asked yourself a basic question? As someone who's over the age of 40, how is it that you were so well educated about the world and civics and geology and history in a context where you could understand your place in the world you live in the timeline of your current life, and what preceded us and what is likely to follow, and those other nations and cultures around the world, and how we impacted them or vice versa? We all grew up having our favorite teachers, our favorite courses, but we grew up literate. And if we chose not to be literate, we were given special counseling, or we were held back, or we were failed. How about that? How about actually giving someone a grade they deserve instead of floating a standard, an artificial construct? And then along comes Bill and Melinda Gates and their foundation and giving tens of millions of dollars. What they want to have, teachers who are rewarded for doing well and change the nature of the curriculum and how things are taught. Do you ever wonder why? What's behind all this? Professor James Tracy has some ideas. You have ideas. I have ideas. I want us to look at this for just a moment. The funding is part of the Gates Foundation, nearly $50 million, what they're calling Measures of Effective Teachers Project that's presently experimenting with teacher evaluation systems. In fact, wasn't it on the PBS NewsHour that Melinda Gates, who's a great promoter of genetic engineering, a great promoter of vaccines, including the polio vaccine, which actually causes polio, said, what the foundation, quote, feels our job is to do is to make sure we create a system where we can have an effective teacher in every single classroom across the United States. Hello, Miss Gates. Maybe you're just too young to understand it, but we all grew up with really good schools, really good public schools, really good teachers, really good educations. Why don't you ask what went wrong instead of trying to create a new system when we had one that was just phenomenal? The effort of extraordinarily wealthy elites, and that's what we're talking about, to further subvert educational practice, and that's what I believe they're doing, through what they call neuromarketing. You've not heard of neuromarketing. It's a technique. It's the latest example of a long sequence of educational reforms. Indeed, the Gates Foundation's fixation on stimulus response measurement and data collection is a part of this. State-sanctioned education in the United States has become a type of task-oriented training, quite apart from what education once involved. The cultivation of the human will and intellect, children in most public schools today receive this type of conditioning, while the more affluent often send their offspring to private institutions or homeschooling. And what passes for education today is to a significant degree the legacy of 19th century to early 20th century German psychologist Wilhelm Wundt, W-U-N-D-T, and the Rockefeller family's philanthropic project. He was a professor at the University of Leipzig. He was the originator of what he termed a new or experimental psychology that stripped psychology of any of its potential philosophical concerns, such as forget the soul, will, or self-determination of the individual. Those are not important. Hello, those are the only thing in psychology that are important. In his reconfiguration of psychology, the mind is merely an apparatus that responds to given stimuli, and through the measurement and recording of the stimuli and responses of the subject, the psychologist in the laboratory, and hence they go from the laboratory and a scientist to a teacher and a student in a classroom. They want to determine the effectiveness of one stimulus response method over another, as well as the functional capacity of the student to respond and adhere to it. So what he and his followers did, the sum total of their experiences, devoid of character and essence that might interfere with the ends of the collective unit, this view of the human psyche set the stage for the establishment of eugenics and psychiatry, which is a form of eugenics as is practiced today, and the social engineering carried out in public school classrooms that, it, even with George Bush and his No Kid Left Behind, one of the most moronic, foolish, waste of time, destructive educational concepts, I was sure at the time that the major unions would have rebelled against it instead of adapting it. It was so compromising the principles of allowing a student to learn in a context that gave meaning and purpose with a moral equation in all things, and it did just the opposite. And yet they lined up like lemmings because something was in it for them. It's so interesting how quickly people who tell us that they're for us end up being against us when we don't realize what they are really for and what they're getting. As a result, we've had nothing but social engineering carried out in our public schools for the last 40 years. Wundt exerted tremendous influence through his American doctoral students who studied at Leipzig and returned to transform U.S. education. One of the most influential of these adherents was G. Stanley Hall. Now, who is he? He came back to the U.S. in 1883. He taught at Johns Hopkins. And he began the American Journal of Psychology and mentor American intellectual and educational icon John Dewey. Others included James McKean Cattell, who returned in 1887 and took a faculty position in psychology at Columbia in 1891, where he mentored 344 doctoral students, each one following in his mold, which was not his. He was merely carrying over on the dramatic school. James Earl Russell, another of Wundt's students, became director of Columbia's Teachers College in 1897 and remained the position until the late 1920s. Little wonder then that later at Columbia they would take people from who had done the human experiments on Jews in the concentration camps and took one in and started the whole program that somehow there was a behavioral issue leading to a genetic issue leading to schizophrenia. Never was true, never has been true, but that's what they did. So for the next 30 years, Cattell, Russell, and Dewey, who ended up with a 10-year stint at the University of Chicago and joined his fellow believers in 1904, played substantial roles in transforming public education along the lines that would firmly establish Wundt's ideas and approaches in American public education. At the same time, Columbia's Teachers College became the largest teaching training institution for teachers in the world. So by the early 1950s, roughly one-third of all deans and presidents of accredited teaching schools in the United States were graduates of the Columbia program. And while his apostles were well-positioned to wreak havoc on U.S. education, their mission was greatly aided through funding by the Rockefeller Foundation. Now there's where John D. Rockefeller saw education as a rewarding object of patronage. And he ponied up $45 million to establish the University of Chicago in 1890 as the investment that fused the Rockefeller name with liberal philanthropic effort. He and his handlers, which included his son, J.D. John Rockefeller Jr., and Frederick Taylor Gates, by the way, no relation to Bill Gates, concluded that education paid off especially well in terms of burnishing the family's image. So as John Jr. became more involved in the family's philanthropic efforts, he devised new avenues for Rockefeller money. He founded the General Education Board, which became known informally as the Rockefeller's Educational Trust. And the board channeled especially sizable funds to reshape elementary education in the American South through the application of Wundtian experimental psychology approaches. Gates remarked famously on the General Education Board's ambitions for the many deprived public schools in the South, where the trust would play a substantial role in education reform. He said, quote, "We shall not try to make these people or any of their children into philosophers or men of learning or men of science." Yeah, they didn't, but they made him obedient. In 1916, the General Education Board proposed establishing a school with a new curriculum that excluded Latin, Greek, English grammar, and classical literature. But they emphasized different teaching methods for history and literature. In 1920, the Lincoln School was established and became the laboratory school for Columbia's Teachers College. Until its closure in 1946, Rockefeller spent millions on the institution and thousands of educators who graduated or visited or trained remained on the program. And then they emulated that in their own communities. So as American education was being overhauled, and with it the consequent diminishment of the informed public opinion, the view of popular democracy among elites following World War I also grew dim. For example, Walter Lippmann, a founding member of the Council on Foreign Relations and a proponent of the Anglo-American Accord throughout the 1920s and 30s, maintained in his writings that decisions of substance cannot be left to the man in the mass, because they lack the expertise in domestic and foreign affairs. Hence, they must always defer to the expert, because the expert is trained in all things. So most professional educators at the college university level regularly encounter the legacy of this kind of Germanic psychology in the Rockefeller's educational undertakings. Students often exhibit an inability to think logically and independently, either aloud or in writing, because formative educational experiences combined with the lifelong instruction of mass media recognize and address the individual not as a full human being capable of profound acknowledgement and understanding, but rather as a sensory apparatus upon which stimuli is targeted and a response promoted and measured, hence the correct answer or product purchase. Thus, the common response when the student is asked to reflect on and discuss course content are unsurprising. What do you want? How much should we rewrite? Will this be on the exam? In such an educational and cultural environment where the recognition and cultivation of individual will is discouraged and a deferral to expert opinion is all but obligatory, the result is a combination of skepticism and cynicism. A man I have an enormous amount of respect for his writings, Erich Fromm, recognized this phenomenon in the 1940s by pointing out how the perception among the individuals that only trained experts could address any complex problem, and then only in their own specific specializations, discourage people from using their own minds to seriously think about and address concerns facing them and society as a whole. He said in 1941, the result of this kind of influence is twofold. One is a skepticism and a cynicism toward everything which is said or printed, while the other is a childish belief in anything that a person is told with authority. This combination of cynicism and naivety is very typical of the modern individual. Its essential result is to discourage him from doing his own thinking and deciding, end quote. This very type of apathetic malaise acts to short-circuit political engagements as much as it lessens the exercise of simple, common sense in everyday decisions. On cable and broadcast television, for example, where most Americans still rely on heavily to form a view of the world, one will encounter an endless sequence of so-called experts wheeled before the camera to provide us with their opinion, and that is supposed to become ours. The technocratic application of neuromarketing is what passes for education today, and it's a fitting outcome to a society that has become almost completely controlled by a scientific elite. As was the case 100 years ago, this technocratic notion is funded and directed by the super wealthy, like the Gates and the Rockefellers, and trained to refine and implement what they see as most efficient practices for sculpting and managing the collective mind. This self-selection class and its overseers also recognize how much a brave new world operates at optimal efficiency when the bulk of the population has been effectively zombified through stultifying stimulus response rituals, a process that after many generations has come close to complete fruition. Professor James Tracy, back in a moment. Our Dr. Grayson is not available, I'm just told. We'll take your calls. Dr. Stace, James Stacy. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. More to come. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. I'd hoped to have an extended version of our previous conversation with Dr. Grayson, but we've not been able to reach him. So we will put this off for another day, and hopefully we'll be able to contact him because he's a brilliant mind. He's a part of our conversation with the Remarkable Minds. Now, beginning tomorrow, I'm going to start by reading some histories of people in this audience who themselves or their family or friends have gone through a medical emergency and the mistakes that the doctors, the nurses, the hospitals have made that have either killed them or so brought them close to death or injury, and yet the system doesn't care and they are left to fend for themselves. Tomorrow, from one of our listeners, what happened to her father last week that caused him to die. Each day, I will give another. If you have stories you would like to send us, please do so. Ask Gary at GaryNull.com, and I'll read them. It's time that we took on these stories. They are important. Let's say hello to Val in our studio in New York. Valerie is the executive producer who worked for thousands of hours on our latest important documentary, The War on Health, which we just premiered. I want to thank the people for coming. And I will be up in Woodstock the beginning of July to premiere it up there and have a lecture. It'll be on the public television station and a lecture all simultaneous. We were just a wonderful group of people. I want to thank all of you who came to the Ethical Culture Center, to the Huntington Arts Cinema in upstate as well. She also produced and worked every day with our engineer, Richie, on Death by Medicine and on Knocking on the Devil's Door. And we'll take a well-deserved break until she comes back to start on the next important project. Hi, Val.
Hey, Gary. How are you doing?
Great.
So I'm just coming on air to congratulate you for your documentary, Knocking on the Devil's Door, Our Deadly Nuclear Legacy. You've just won the Silver Ace Award at the 2012 Las Vegas Film Festival, and the film won the best of over 1,000 films that were submitted from over 30 countries. So congratulations with that. And also The War on Health. The audience went wild for this film. It was just fantastic. So.
Well, we're pleased about that, and since I'm not in the city now, please, once again, since I didn't have a chance to see everyone before I left, because I had to leave early on Sunday morning at 3 o'clock, just say thank you to all the people, Richard Gale and Richie and everyone. I tried to acknowledge everyone on the night there, but people just have to know that me out in the field filming, yes, that's one part of it, but you have to see that the months, the almost half year that goes by where people are working collectively, maybe 20 to 30 hours a day between two to three people on making a film come to fruition. And we have five new ones ahead of us, five very important social issues coming down the pike. And I'll be bringing one out every 3 months. I'm on a 3 month cycle, 3 months per project, helping people in different fields. Next up, genetic engineering, then animal rights, and then the environment. So we're taking on a lot of issues, and you're crucial to that whole process. So we thank you, and I'll let people know how they can watch these films once they've been shown and on an upcoming program. Thank you very much, Val.
Thank you, Gary.
Let's say hello to people on the air. Our phone calls are going crazy, I'm told, in New York. Let's say hello first to Richard from Huntington, Long Island. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Great.
I wanted to call because I've been in the financial industry for over a decade, and I'm on the sales level. I'm talking to clients day in and day out, and I get a feel back for what they're saying about zero prosecutions in the financial industry for executives that took liberties upon themselves, have outright lied on statements. And I was wondering if your show can put the pressure on the state attorney generals who's in charge of actually pressing charges and on these individuals, on these corporate empires, and if it's possible that we could document their names when they're up for elections, put their phone numbers, their emails up there, so we can actually, as people, as citizens, put pressure on them to actually force the charges for these corporate executives. Is that impossible, or am I crazy to think that?
It's not impossible. If you bring us any information that is validated, then we will do that. It was William Blake who said, "A truth that's told with bad intent beats all the lies you can invent." So we have to understand that we live today not just with a disparity between those who have assets and resources. That's not important. I don't care if a person has 20 cars and a 300,000-foot house. That's their business. What I care about, does that person have a disproportionate amount of power in the world when we're all supposed to have the same equal power? It is the accumulation of power that becomes more significant than the accumulation of wealth, though one generally creates the other. Because with power, you have the power to exclude yourself from the same standards and laws as anyone else. If you and I create a problem for ourselves, if you and I have businesses and we're not able to maintain our businesses for whatever reason, we will not be bailed out. No bank will give us a bailout. The government won't care. We'll go through a bankruptcy, close our doors, hopefully learn our lessons, not have too many people that we borrow money from who supported us or were supporting them be too angry with us for too long a period of time. Though in likelihood, where I come from, they'll remind you, since WASPs tend to remind each other of their failings all the time. That's the nature of my culture in the South, and I know it very well, and found it one of its limitations. In other cultures, they can be more forgiving, more understanding. But we never do that to the major corporations. They could have, for example, the head of J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon, sits on the board right now as we speak of the New York Federal Reserve.
I'm watching it.
And then gave J.P. Morgan in excess, I'm told the smallest amount was $284 billion. I was also given a figure I haven't been able to independently confirm of $421 billion. But now let's just say it's the smaller. $240 billion to give your own one. Now, what exactly did they do with it? Did they give it to small business people? Did they stop home foreclosures? Did they put a moratorium? Did they reduce student interest to zero so that students who were no longer going to be employed, 55% graduating with a baccalaureate, and over 350,000 PhDs and advanced degrees who are unemployed, did they give them a break? No. They bought their competition. Do you know the two firms that J.P. Morgan bought and were subsidized by the American taxpayer? Got $2 a share for one, and all of it was,
Lehman Brothers.
Lehman Brothers they bought. And they bought another bank, major one. Which one?
Off the top of my head, I think, I don't want to guess, and I don't want to mislead, but, you know, not me. I don't know.
Well, I know who it is. I'm just hopeful. You're on the financial... I thought you
Off the top of my head.
I'll give you some clues. I'll give you some clues. You tell me which one it is. Wachovia or Washington Mutual.
WaMu went down in a lot of pieces. And their most profitable
Bear Stearns.
That was another.
Yeah. They took these into their fold. We paid for it. They manipulated it. And not a single thing has happened to any of these people. So you see, we have two cultures. When someone who's in the police commits a crime, does something wrong, how often are they held accountable by the same standards that if you broke the same law, you'd be held accountable?
That's all I was trying to point out. I make one misleading statement. Stones are being thrown, and I'm accountable for it. Restitution's always made. On the same token, we hear articles left and right that come out on actual, you know, qualified newspapers, you know, credible news agencies talking about misleading statements from Bank of America, CEO, all the way on down. But not one single charge has been filed.
And a my simple question, reason, because the state's attorney generals, the governors of the states, the federal attorney general, that's where it should be started. All of these are political people who have alliances to the people who got them into office. When we take all money, every single nickel out of all elections, and return elections to due democratic processes, then we will not have this happen. Until that time, it can only happen. It is inevitable that people in power will protect people in power and continue to accelerate the excesses of people who have the capacity to hold no barrier sacred, no boundary impenetrable to their greed and need. Thank you for your call.
Thank you, Gary.
Gordon from Queens, your turn. And by
Thank
the way,
you,
for those of you who are coming up to the end of our first hour of this program, we do have a number you can call. If you call this number, I'm going to give you in a second, you can continue listening to this program over the telephone anywhere in America. 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066, or listen on the web. Otherwise, we're going to say goodbye to many of our land-based stations. And by the way, I was just told, even though I'm not in the city, that over 40,000 people listen to this show over the telephone. So we thank them, and it's growing. Gordon, your turn.
Thank you, Gary. That's a great service, the TV on the telephone. And I just wanted to comment what you said about radio TV talk show host Bill O'Reilly, the Fox News commentator, has named an alleged Sheldon Silver, the Speaker of the New York State Assembly, as being the most corrupt politician in America. elected by some 27,000 votes from the Lower East Side. He holds sway over 18 million New Yorkers. This is the same Sheldon Silver that's pushing for all the psychiatric drugs. And while he's collecting $1 million a year from his law firm in New York City, running ads, if you've been hurt by any of these psychiatric drugs, please contact this law firm. It's an abomination.
It stops being an abomination when you have people from the Lower East Side who decide to challenge. It's always difficult to challenge an incumbent. It's about a 92% advantage they have currently. What you have to do is you have to educate the people in the neighborhood with a grassroots campaign as to what's wrong with any given candidate, why they should not be returned to their source of power, and why you should have a term limit. One, in all offices in America, from the mayor to the city council, it should be 2 years in office for everyone, no more than that, and only run once, and no public funding. We're not there. We won't be there for a while. But in time when everything around us collapses, which is inevitable, then from that, hopefully those who have been disempowered will no longer allow those so-called experts. Why do you think I did the commentary today? To show that we defer through our educational system to an indoctrination process that an expert, always the best and brightest. Now, who's Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and Obama and George Bush? They all went to the best and brightest schools. These are anti-intellectual, anti-spiritual, anti-humanistic institutions. But boy, they support neoliberal standards. They support globalization. They support the authority is always right. So we have to get away from this enamored idea that an expert knows more about everything than we do. They do not. If you sat across from me and listened as a fly on the wall to some of the most powerful people in the world that I've counseled, you would ask yourself, how in the world did this person ever get that power? They're an idiot. They don't know diddly squat. But you don't have to know anything, especially if you're the president. All you have to have is people who can answer the questions, and then you just read a monitor and make sure that no one ever asks you a question that's not planted, so you have a perfect political answer. One-on-one, they would fail. Thank you very much. I appreciate your input, Gordon. Frank from Manhattan. Frank, your turn.
Hi, Gary. I would suggest that you make a movie on the Federal Reserve.
Frank, I just finished one on one of our most corrupt bureaucracies, the FDA. I will look at all the other options and the most seriously dysfunctional and most oppressive, and I will see about doing that. I thank you.
Because I think it's important that the economic system be looked at, because that's what determines everything. Thank you, Gary.
You are right. Peter from New Jersey. Peter, your turn.
Hi, Gary. I would like to know about a term that's used quite often on the radio station and by you, and the term you use is critical thinking. Can you explain or define what that is? So it would be helpful to me in my life.
Well, let me answer it in a few different ways. There's an old Chinese proverb that says, to be uncertain is to be uncomfortable, but to be certain is to be ridiculous. Therefore, critical thinking takes us away from the ridiculous, takes us through an uncomfortable state to the truth of what we're trying to determine. Frederick Dumont who said, what was once thought can never be unthought, which means that once we're locked into an idea, can we surrender knowledge? And it's hard for us because we value knowledge. But what if the knowledge we're given is tainted, slighted, against the truth? Then you have people who have been indoctrinated and they believe in something. And hence critical thinking allows us to step away from ourselves and to judge ourselves to say which of my thoughts, which of my actions, which of my rituals and beliefs are counterintuitive, which are wrong. Can I surrender them? And so that is what critical thinking means. It was Anatole France who said it is human nature to think wisely and to act in an absurd fashion. And so we have people who are given positions of power and authority that we assume have been critical in their judgment and critical in their capacity to think without understanding there's a difference between critical thinking and innate wisdom, I would prefer those people who are not from the best and brightest schools but have innate wisdom and common sense and a grasp of reason than those who come from purely the idolatry of uncontested belief in critical thinking.
So, but however, your judgment is always based on how much information you have, and if the information is correct in the first place.
It is not how much information you have; it is how true the information is. Can you measure what you have against some acid test to determine if it's real or not? And that's why I believe I've said many times that we should try to deconstruct each of our arguments before we embrace them. And that which you can deconstruct, don't use. That which you cannot deconstruct, that seems reasonable, then you can embrace. That's it. So I thank you very much for your calls. We're out of time. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Next up, the whistleblowers. Please stay with us.